This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast for another week. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. With me, two people that are allergic to weekends. I have the High Performance Coach for the Metro Men, Darren Best. Welcome, Bestie.
Hello, everyone.
And I have the High Performance Coach for the Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
Both of you added to your resumes on the weekend by also becoming part-time photographers for the program. Just people of many talents.
Well, some with more talent than others, I'd say, but...
Zoe was pretty happy with the lines of the boys' photo from out of All-State camp, but I thought you did a pretty good job, Bestie.
Look, it's not my strong suit.
Yeah, selfie game is probably more your area.
I did take a photo of Coops from about 3 centimetres away from his face, so...
With a zoom lens too, so it was impressive.
So it's all up in his nose.
Some quality work there. So if there is anything you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, of course, you are more than welcome to email in. You can obviously interact with us using the hashtag TalkingSplit. We do appreciate, of course, any ratings, reviews, the coaching assist of sharing the podcast is always fantastic. Had a couple of people jump in the DMs this week and talk about they've enjoyed certain topics over other topics. And we talk about things a little bit more, which is always good. Always happy to discuss that. This is our first opportunity, though, to catch up with you, Bestie, post-national champs. Has the post-nationals depression gone away yet, or is it still sort of lingering a little bit?
I don't think it had time to kick in because literally I left Geelong and drove straight to under 16 state trials. And then, you know, the next night was NPP and then FDP the following morning. And yeah, we just kept rolling. Just quickly was pleased the way our group fought, you know, had lots of comments around the way we played. Just obviously the lack of size and maturation of bodies with an all bottom age team and even an under 18 athlete in the group, you know, really hurt us on the glass. But other than that, you know, we tried to put some kids up in lights and we think we did that and won some little coaching battles along the way with a few timeouts having to be called and teams going in zone against us. But yeah, just excited to have been part of another Nationals. It's a wonderful experience.
Enjoyable week though. Like even like we spoke about it before you went into the week, like what the week was going to look like for you guys, whether you were going to try and upset people or whether you were going to just try and play everyone equally. Like you're happy with the outcome at the end of it?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a bit of buzz after we beat Global, you know, in the first game that was exciting. And then, you know, to beat both SA groups was great as well. And it's just unfortunate the way it unfolded that we crossed over against the other Vic team in the quarterfinal. So, yeah.
And not a terrible Vic team either. Obviously, they jagged a bronze medal.
Yeah.
And then even copping ACT in that last game. Like it's a very good ACT group as well.
Well, this is what I said. You know, we said to our kids, you know, you're going against someone that's about to play for the Boomers. You know, so great opportunity for them and the chance for Coops and I to fire shots at Ash any chance we could get, which was good as well. So, yeah, no, all good.
Excellent, excellent. And you know, obviously a great result for some of the Victorian teams. The men grabbing a bronze, their last game of the tournament was obviously a really impressive one and the women coming away with the silver on that end too. The Ivor Burge teams, the men grabbed a silver in that competition and the women won the 3x3 from that end. So, overall, really good tournament for the Victorians in that space. But, of course, as I alluded to a little bit earlier, allergic to weekends with the amount of work you guys do in this space in particular, All-State camp over the weekend. So this is something that's been a little bit of a feature since the reshuffle of the high-performance program a few years ago, that bringing the country and metro athletes together. So, Zoe, how did it come about? Like, what is the All-State camp largely about in this space?
Well, it is. You've pretty much hit the nail on the head with the focus for it. It's to bring all of the athletes within our SDP program together and have them be able to compete against each other where they don't normally get the opportunity to do it. Like country athletes are often quite isolated because of sheer logistics and geography. So to be able to bring them into a central location and go up against the metro athletes and other country athletes is really important. And just expose them to what else is in their age group, what else is in the other age groups. You know, we get a really good opportunity because we have them for the whole day to be able to, you know, obviously work on skill set, but also culture, expectations, you know, hit the parents with some workshops and some learning for them as well from our service providers. So it's really just about being able to have the opportunity to, you know, have them all together and compete and really set the foundation of what this program is about and what we want it to be.
Yep. So, I mean, you spoke about some workshops for parents. What do they go through? Because obviously Bendigo is probably not central for 95% of your cohort, like both country and metro. So if the parents are going to be out there, they may as well do something. So what did you have them go through?
Yeah, so our service providers, we had, unfortunately, Frank Arcego, our mental health and wellness service provider, was unable to attend due to an injury. But normally we have him discuss about how to have conversations with their children regarding basketball or performance, as well as, you know, any kind of, you know, mental health conversations that they might need to have, because at the end of the day, they're going to notice that first. They're going to notice those changes in their children before we do as coaches. So that's a really important part of what the workshops are about. We had Lisa Middleton, our nutrition service provider, talk about, so for the female athletes on the female day, it was about managing iron levels through food and diet. And for the boys' day, it was about developing muscle mass, how to, you know, develop muscle mass through diet, or assist, sorry, with developing muscle mass. Darren McInnes came in from CORE, and he went through with all of the athletes a session on what they can do, a strength and conditioning session, if they can't access a gym, which, you know, I was surprised of how many put their hand up saying that they go to the gym.
That's why the muscle mass presentation was important for the boys on the other side.
But I think there's going to the gym and then there's doing something basketball specific. So, you know, being able to run them through that and explain that and then get the program as well as some videos that are going to follow up with that, I think is really important. And we also had, this was in addition to, Darren from Basketball Australia Pathways, Darren Smith, come in and talk about college pathways and, you know, what they need to do. Obviously, as basketball people, we are aware of, you know, it's not just about I want to go to college. Subjects matter, or subject selection matters, grade point average matters, all these sort of things that you probably don't think about until you decide you want to go, and then you get told that you haven't done these things. So trying to give that information earlier. And then in addition, something we tried this year, which I think was really, really beneficial, is we had some parents of ex-athlete or ex-pathway athletes, so that are still, you know, currently playing, but what it was like for them as parents coming through with these kids in state teams or beyond, and I think the challenges they faced and how they dealt with them and things they might do better next, you know, if they had their time again, and all these sort of things, just to give them a perspective of what it was like for them as well. You know, it's one thing to just push a whole bunch of information onto the parents, but having a parent perspective is also really, really important, I think, too. So a bit of a Q&A, sort of open forum, bit of storytelling. So, yeah, it was really good. But, you know, it's there. Yes, it's there to give the parents something to do. Obviously, there's a lot of the time no point driving home, because by the time you do that, you've got to turn around and drive back. But it is also, we find it really important that, like, we need parents on our side with what we're trying to teach as well. And we want to try, and a big part of our program for the four of us is it's a holistic approach. So we're not just trying to make good basketballers. We're trying to make sure that they're, you know, they're eating right, they're taking care of their body, they're taking care of their mind, they're, you know, all those sort of things. It's not just about your jump shot, and we need parents on side to be able to facilitate that. So that's why we think that education is really important.
Absolutely. So Bessie, how do you actually put a day or a camp like this together? Like, it's one thing to run like a school holiday camp, and, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's babysitting, because it's not, like, there's more than that, in particular the selection camps, but something like this is a lot that goes into the day. How did you guys come about what the structure was going to look like, what you're going to emphasize on and off court? Like, what does that look like from your end?
Well, obviously, it's a series of meetings with the HPCs to do that. But for us, we've been working together for, you know, the last cycle and now this cycle around developing more of an all-state mentality with some things. So that made it a little bit easier around some common actions, some common terminology, those types of things. And then based off the last Oz camps that we went to, our last high performance meetings that we had nationally around some deficiencies in the sport across Australia, really emphasised some things that we wanted to make sure we had in the plan. This was the first time that we did the scheduling of the camp the way we did, and we all agreed that it was better this way. Previously, we would have maybe an offensive base session, a defensive base session, maybe there was a shooting session, and then normally there was some sort of activity with core. And as the day would go on, kids would be doing different things at different times, whereas this time we said, you know what, we're going to have, yes, they're going to have different sessions, but everyone's going to do the same session at the same time. So what it allowed for us was to create a program that built throughout the day. It allowed the athletes to visit with each other during the breaks, more importantly, the coaches to visit with each other during the breaks to talk about what went well, what didn't go well. And for us, the biggest thing, you know, for us HPCs is we weren't coaching the same session four times in a row.
Yeah, you get caught in that station world, don't you, where you get very good at teaching forward pivots, but you never get to see anything else.
Your third session is probably the best, and the fourth one you sort of then just rush
tapers
through it.
Off a touch. Yeah.
Yeah, so I found the coaches were energized throughout the day because every session was new.
Yeah, you get to teach something different. Yeah. You got, you know, your raft of kids either way. I kind of like the idea of it personally. Like it's... I find that way with coaching courses. Like I'll go and present three community coaching courses 3 weeks in a row, and by the third week I'm glossing over stuff. It's like, oh, I've already spoken about this. It's like, not with this group.
Yeah.
Like I've spoken about it with the other two groups, but this one's a little bit different. So I like the change in that personally. So,
well, I think it more mimicked perhaps how you would prepare a team, even though we weren't doing that. You know, you'd go to a practice and be like, right, we're going to work on some D and then we're going to work on some O, and then now we're going to try and fix the D for that O, you know, whereas... if you're just doing a solely defensive session to begin with, naturally there's some frustrations around the offense because we haven't worked on it. So we found it worked well, and I assume we'll probably go with that again.
Yep, excellent. So were both, I'll ask you first, so were boys and girls the same content for both, or were there slight variances depending on what you're doing?
Overall, it was the same content, and the action itself, the skill set itself was the same, but the actions may have been slightly different. So, for example, when we talk about team defense, we on the girls' side are still in the help from split line, drop and guard two. The boys are in peel switching. So that's, we're still working on that sort of rotations and things. It's the same, but those there are the slight variances there, but more often than not, we're all the same across the board.
Yep. So what's the reason for stay in front and help off split on the girls' side?
So mainly because that's what's still happening at a senior level for us. So, you know, watching the World Cup, as well as it promotes accountability on the ball. And from a female side of the sport, we have the ability to stay in front. We just don't do it. So it's a bit different on the boys' side, because when you're coming up against the US and, well, best of luck staying in front of that with your slide, you know, point your toe, push off slide, like that's not going to happen. So we're in a position where that is still the main way of defending. So we're going to stay with that until, you know, if it does change, it's certainly not an old school stubbornness.
Hard and fast. Yeah. This is what it is, and it's what it'll always be. Yep.
If we start to see the trends across the board, you know, from our Australian teams and internationally, well, then we'll look to make those changes.
And I suppose from the boys' side then, Bestie, why peel switching over anything else? Like, was that a conscious decision, or is that just something that you just sort of saw that worked with the kids you had that were doing it naturally? Or what's the theory?
Well, largely to see how basketball has been played in Europe. And the level of athleticism now on the male side, we don't really have time to not peel and make a definitive decision. Otherwise, you get caught on the rim. So, yeah, we've tried to do it. It's going well. I think it's probably the only change that I can think of, or the only difference between the boys and girls programs. You know, the denial, one pass away. Definitely, I guess, as opposed to sitting in the nail is concerning on the boys' side. You know, they can come through down the middle or even on the side, you know, getting through and just being caught late, that help and rotate. So we try to make it a little bit more definitive. If you go and go, meet them on the outside and then we'll just fly around. So, yep. And, you know, if we look at the way the Boomers played, it was really inspiring that way. They turned their rotations into a way to attack, and we've found it help in controlling the amount of times our defense collapses, because we're sort of more using the terminology rotating, don't collapse. Yeah. It's all a work in progress.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, it's difficult, I suppose, for a lot of coaches that are out there at club and association land to hear some of this sort of stuff, and they may not be across it. So, of course, reach out to your hub leads in that sort of space, and if, you know, they need extra help, then obviously they can come to you guys in that space as well. It's just a little bit of as to what they're doing, why they're doing it, understanding the reason behind it, because you guys just haven't, you know, put your hand over your eyes, thrown a dart at a dartboard and said, hey, this is what we're doing. But there's obviously a reason behind what you're doing with a lot of this stuff. And depending on how many people can get to things like camps and STP and those types of things, they may just not be aware of it. So, and that ties into what we're doing during this podcast, is just going over that All-State curriculum, I suppose, for lack of a better term. What did you do? What did you do well? What would you do differently? What did you see that the kids were really good at? What are the areas where their club and association coaches can actually help out a little bit and sort of do a little bit more work before they hit your level as well? So we'll go through it. And let's session one, looking at this offensive and defensive foundation and gameplay, which is always interesting when you see gameplay come into the first session of the day. Again, I love it personally. Like, but, you know, that's my thing. I want to see kids play, and you learn more, I think, through them playing than you do by doing like alley drill for, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes as warm up. But you guys,
alley drill.
Yeah. Yuck. Very much out. Very much out. So, but you guys did start with individual defense though. So what was the theory behind starting on a defensive focus, Bestie?
Well, that was off the back of the feedback from the recent Asia and Worlds, along with what we saw at 16s and then 20s, was inability to guard the ball one-on-one. So although we talked about, yeah, we want to peel switch, let me change that. We don't want to peel switch. If we have to, we'll peel switch. So yep. It was just about bringing some of that accountability, a little bit of closeout technique, start the camp off on the right foot, saying this matters to us. And we had three on-court sessions, and every one you'll see there we hit some shell. Every camp. So
one of my questions actually that's coming out. So you've done well there. So when you're talking to
me, I'm surprised you've got one of the session plans there. How'd you get that, Rob?
You know, I have secret people on the side that do stuff with me. You know, some of the high performance coaches just maybe slipped it under the table. But
Jenny, absolutely.
Like, without a question. But you guys talk about closeouts the first thing. What were the things you were really emphasizing with the closeouts? Like, were you talking angles? Were you talking hand position, foot position? Like, what were the things that you were really trying to hit on with the closeouts and that individual defense portion?
Well, for us, it was closeout to touch.
Yep.
That was the first thing, not this, you know, sort of Friday night run inside the three-point line to close out. So we wanted to close out to the ball, close out to touch. Declare it early is the first thing, and then arriving on airtime. So having your off-ball positioning be appropriate and understanding of what's happening on the court, and then be able to arrive on airtime to close out to touch. So we've just got a bit of a saying that the feet guard the feet and the hand guards the ball.
Yep. Yeah. So did you find that having it in early, it was an easy reference point back for the rest of the session or the rest of the day?
Yeah, I think we didn't have to go back and explain what close out to touch meant.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to the split kick extra, receiver and second cutter principles though. So I'm sure everyone's heard split kick extra by now, especially if you've been involved in Victorian basketball, or it's Australian basketball in general. How did that look from your end? Like, you've obviously got a little bit of 3v2 in there, 4v3 and those types of things. Did the kids understand what they were doing? Were there some skill deficiencies or decision deficiencies in there? How did it look?
Yeah, I think there were some times. So the whole point about having that secondary action off split kick extra is that we get to our receiver spots pretty well, but we nail our feet to that spot, and good defensive teams can then defend both in that situation. So we're trying to encourage that if there's early help, we want to get to our receiver spot and then cut off of that, depending upon, you know, what sort of drive it is or whether who you've shifted, and put pressure defensively – put the pressure back on the defense there. Because early help doesn't often result in a drift or a diag getting a catch, because it's generally on the edge of the key. That's a tough type of pass. So early help, cut, late help hold. I had the babies, so the younger group, and it got better. It was just there was hesitation in when to cut and even how to cut. So one of the things I found myself having to say a lot is, even if it, you know, you take a couple of steps and you're deciding that you're going to cut, even if you realize that you're not the one that was supposed to be cutting, keep going. Get all the way to the basket and then get out, because the cut itself, as much as we want it to be in certain areas, you know, like a baseline drive 45 cut, middle penetration baseline back cut, at the end of the day, the movement is the most important thing and the shifting of the defense is the most important thing. So, you know, we had a lot of – and it's a a real thing that we fight a lot in girls basketball. It's an over-compliance. I want to – this is the rule, so I need to make sure I'm following the rule to a T so I don't get in trouble. And at the end of the day, just if you're going to tank and do the wrong thing, just do it hard. You know, get all the way into the bucket and then get out. And we can then fix that. What we can't fix, especially when it's both of them that do it, when they take two or three steps in and then stand. And that just takes away all of the spacing and we get less than zero out of that. So, you know, that was something that required probably more work than we had time to give them with the younger age group. The older age groups were obviously better at that. They've had more experience with it. You know, it's certainly not, we wouldn't say, you know, yep, we can move on from that skill set now, but that was able to move quicker than it was with the younger age groups.
Yep, makes sense. So if you're like an association coach out there somewhere, more work on getting to receiver spots, keeping space on, like not creeping in,
yeah,
movement off the ball. And I think, I mean, everyone in this room, three of us and maybe four if you count Drury on the wall, would probably suggest that our players don't move well enough off the ball. Would that be fair? Like we all sort of stand and watch dribble penetration happen, then we just sort of plant. Yeah.
Well, and it's also a case of, you know, we want to make sure that we are being proactive offensively. So it's always got to go through the receiver spot. So something we need to encourage is, and they started to do it actually on Saturday, is they hadn't done the work early to get to the receiver spot. So they're being shallow on their cut, which means their angle is off, which means defense can guard both. So they've got to get to that receiver spot to flatten out either the nail or the low split and then make that cut, rather than, you know, going from the bend where you can be seen by all.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense.
I would think that everyone at all levels should be having some sort of receiver work in every practice.
Yep. Would you go...
Every practice.
Post receiver first, or would you probably put the perimeter stuff in first? So when I say post, for those that may not be across it, like are we talking dunkers stuff, or would you go straight to the perimeter with drift, diag, etc.?
You could do either. We play a small-sided game, a two-on-two, where there's one wing driver. Maybe it's from a CP3 start or something, and then the post has to wheel opposite. So it's a momentary two-on-one.
Yep.
And then obviously the four perimeter players as well. I think that should be hit on every practice.
Yep.
If you're in a 12s and 14s age group, all perimeter. Like, unless you've got a 14-year-old, particularly girl, 6'5", well, then, okay, she's going to be big, so you can put her inside. But otherwise, the dunkers stuff isn't overly complicated, I don't believe. It's literally just wheeling under or wheeling above. So I'd be encouraging in those younger age groups while they're still growing and we don't know who or what they're going to be, all the perimeter stuff, weak side perimeter stuff, you know, dragging around behind, all of that. Get all of that in, because I think the dunkers stuff is probably easier to teach.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that makes a lot of sense. So more disadvantage work at training sessions, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3.
What I will say about that though, 100%, but we also need to, with split kick extra stuff, get used to creating the split again as well. So don't just rely on having the advantage. So in the beginning, give them the advantage. And then as you progress, then you've got to take that advantage away and it's up to them to create it. Mm-hmm. Just so then we're not, you know, always, oh, hang on, you're supposed to tag out. Like, no.
Yeah.
You've got to.
It's an interesting point you make, though, because there was a conversation I had with a coach not too long ago about, and similar to what you were talking about, Bessie, with like CP3 starts. So start with the defense facing the basketball on their back and play from there. It's like, yeah, this is nice and it gives the offense an advantage, but we're actually not working on a realistic closeout anymore. Like, is this hurting us defensively? But are we actually hurting the offense just as much? Because now they don't have to read anything. So it's, yeah, I like the idea of start with, say, CP3 so they can get the idea of what it's supposed to look like, but then even just like a little quick ball toss and then...
Yeah, as you progress. And that's how you can two-way teach as well. Add the closeout in. You know, if you've done your work on your closeout, add it in off a closeout and play from there, and it's up to them to create that split rather than just expect to have the advantage.
Yep, absolutely. So we've already talked about like peel switching and the team defense stuff, so we're not going to go into shell. Everyone knows what shell is by now.
What I will say on shell, sorry.
No, that's okay, Pistie.
Is just this to say, I think you should do shell every practice as well, right? And just to say you've done shell because you've traced the ball around the perimeter and jumped from one spot to the other does not mean you've done shell. There needs to be actions within your shell. So not to go into too much time on it, Rob, but we had our shell, but we also had to defend a pass and cut and a screen away within the shell.
Yep.
And that was a challenge. Definitely. The pass and cut was okay, to be fair.
Yep.
When somebody did get face cut, generally the cut was pushed quite wide, where you probably wouldn't want to be on that side of it anyway. We don't tell the kids that. We want them to jump to it the whole time anyway. But
yeah, anyway. Different problem. Pick your battle.
The screen away, though, was a real issue.
Yeah, okay.
Was a real issue. The screen defender chasing the screener and not opening up to maybe guard the nail or be in a position to help on the ball. And then the screen receiver, their defender just not understanding when they need to go to their player. And the difference of I should be on low or split, even though I know there's this screening action coming. And we spoke about that on the boys' side. In as you play defense, you need to start to understand the actions that are coming and the coverages that you're in so you can somewhat be proactive. Because yep. We were trying to work on a lock and trail, but because they were caught trying to do the right thing, be on split line, quite often they would go under it, which at that level, the kids weren't good enough to flip the screen and flare it. But we know levels above, that's exactly what will happen.
Yeah, I think with the 18s, like that flare, like out of a shell shape, so to speak, and that skip pass that's coming, that's going to be brutal for a lot of them to guard.
Yep.
As kids get better range.
Well, and that's, I've changed a little bit of language on that, particularly on the girls' side, as we know physicality is not natural. So it's something we have to try and drive. And one of the things with, you know, guarding any kind of pin down is lock and trail for me encourages that I can just follow rather than, so I've started saying tight and fight. So you go and you make contact first. Don't wait for them to come to you. You make contact with the person coming off the screen. And then your job is to push them off their line and get over and fight over that screen. Now, if you get hooked up, well, then you're in lock and trail. But your idea, unless your coach has said, we want to load up on the split line and force the lock and trail, but that's probably the easiest option. And one of the things we always talk about as HPCs is we want to teach the hardest thing. And then if they go into higher levels that are doing, you know, pack line or, you know, lock and trail or these
under picks or whatever,
that's going to be easier to teach. So, and for them to pick up as well. So, pushing them off their line as they come off that screen is really important, especially from a, you know, next level perspective, because, you know, you watch any sort of international basketball and you don't get to go anywhere without somebody laying a body on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So it's something that, you know, if we can get that in as a base level. And then, like I said, if you get clipped on that screen because it's just an absolute ripper of a screen, which then helps us work on becoming better screeners, because if we're not, nobody's getting open off that action, then you've got that. I always talk about this is your bailout, not your go-to. Lock and trail is your bailout, not your go-to.
Yep. No, I like it a lot. So ball screen offense. Types of ball screens you're using, Bestie? I see there's a grenade dribble handoff in here, and that is one of my favourites personally. But what else are you guys doing with ball screen offense?
Yeah, so we started with a drag screen. We found particularly off the back of 20s, you know, being able to catch D-Trans maybe a little unorganized. So we wanted to work on some of that on offense. And the area on the floor that we did that was, you know, a high wedge is what we talked about. And then just some of the work on the screening angles, the terminology that we used was back to the point of attack. So that way, you know, the screener, quite often in a drag screen, you'll see them having their back sort of facing back towards halfway and the defense can just slide under it. So what happened organically was they almost turned into somewhat of a step up. But, you know, ultimately that's fine as well. Yeah. You know, anything to get downhill. So we worked on that. And then obviously, yeah, the handoff uphill after our split action. So it would be off a high seam catch and we would have two wing players come together and split on the other seam. And then the one that was coming back to the ball, we'd play grenade handoff. Yeah.
Yep. How did the grenade stuff go? Have you done a lot in this space with them or not?
Well, all of them have been doing that particular action at their hubs.
Yep.
So the drag screen, no, but the split into the uphill handoff, yes. Yep.
Absolutely. It's one of the areas I'm seeing a lot on Friday nights, that the teams that have the grenade handoff stuff in, they are so dynamic playing downhill because everyone gets so caught going underneath everything else. You can't go underneath that type of an action, I don't think, yeah, without giving just a free run at the rim. So if you are looking for more stuff to get a little bit of rim attack, I would suggest looking at that type of an action with your teams. Of course, conceptually, you don't have to put in a whole new set just to get that option. You can find ways to tweak it. But on ball screen defense, so Zoe, this is your world. we'll say yes. You like teaching on ball screen defense. Sure. I know that. What did you look at? Like, what sort of coverages did you put in? What were the main teaching points with that?
Yeah, so we looked at from a 1-4, a wrap switch, and then anything that involved the 5 was a drops coverage. So the wrap switch is obviously a little bit different in the sense that the player, normally we get taught when we're switching that the player that's originally guarding the ball has to get underneath and stop the dive. This time they've still got to, again, fight over the top of that screen and push the ball handler into the screener's defense and then wrap over the top and get into a denial stance. And, you know, 2-on-2, they tend to score a fair bit off it, but as you start to add players and you add tags and all those sort of things, it looks like it's open and it lulls the offense into thinking, oh, there's a gap. And by the time they throw it, it's not there anymore. And it's also, you know, with us having to qualify through Asia, it's incredibly prevalent through Asian basketball if that's how they defend on ball screens. So not only from a sense of we can use it as a weapon for us, we need to learn also how to play against it because we're going to see it a lot. With the drops.
Sorry, just with the denial stuff before you keep going. So with the denial, are you saying like forearm on chest, like ear on chest type stuff, hand in lane, or are you doing something different denial-wise?
Yeah, no, and it's a case of trying to, because generally it ends up somewhat of a mismatch if they've, you know, the offense has sorted it out right and you end up with like a 1-4 switch. So it is a case of, you know, in that denial stance, but then attack the legs and try and push them out as much as you can. And obviously the progression of that is then as they, if they dive on the rim, is that tagger, if that tagger is a 3 or, you know, a dynamic, someone bigger, well, then they take that. And but that's obviously, we didn't get to that, but that's sort of what you're trying to look at. But it's really important, attack the legs, keep them out, don't allow them to just go wherever they want and try and, you know, mouse in the house you. But it is originally in that denial stance just to stop that first look as they come off, because as soon as they hear switch, the first thing anybody coming off a screen does is check the roller.
Yep. That makes sense.
From a drops perspective, one of the, I'll say misconception, it's not a misconception, it is actually how it was taught for a long time and described for a long time, is that the person showing or dropping, so the screen is D, had to drop right off to the foul line if it was a mid-pick or, you know, step right off. And that's just, it's not viable in our game. You know, teams are starting to get better at the mid-range pull-up jumper and all those sorts of things. So the coverage on the person coming off the screen is obviously, again, that Titan fight, try and push them off the line on the bounce. So if you push them off their line beforehand, you're going to get pinged. But if you can do it on the bounce, you're less likely to get that call. And again, if you get clipped on that screen, it's fight over the top, almost like in a lock and trail. But your job is to get back in front of the ball, shoulders in front of the ball. And again, switching is your bailout, not your go-to. But the person guarding the screener has to meet the ball handler at the level of the ball, of the screen. So we don't drop off straight away. We're there and we show on the bounce. So a lot more of a flat show on the bounce. And then as they look to come off, their head needs to stay in line with the ball handler, but their shoulder needs to stay in line with their, like if their screener is rolling on the rim. So that's when they start to drop off. They don't drop off before the screens happen. They drop off as the action is happening. And again, massive emphasis if you've got a particularly a, you know, any corners, but a weak side corner or strong side corner, you want to make sure that there's a tag there to catch that roller. Just, you know, a quick little check and then get back to theirs to give the screen or the person now screening the ball time to get back once we've got back in front of the ball. I hope that made sense. It made sense in my head, but
Replay 15 seconds at a time if you need to go back and have a listen to it again and throw your teaching points down. But it's one of those things, like, and this is probably what you guys have gone through a fair bit, in all honesty, when putting these sessions together. Like, you would have sat in rooms for hours on end trying to work out the progression, what's the emphasis and all. Like, it's not just we'll just roll out the same session plan we had last time. Yeah. It's the idea is to constantly be evolving in this space.
Well, and the hard part is too, we don't have a group, and nobody has it, where all the athletes are at the same level. They're all at different parts of their development and their journey and their growth and all those sort of things. So trying to find things that touch on skill set for everybody at their whatever level that they're at or stage that they're at in their development.
Yep, makes sense. So first session over and done with. Start of the second session, every coach's favourite buzzword, defensive transition. What did it look like, Bestie?
Not great.
Not great. Gave up some points, to be fair to say.
Well, look, we've tried to simplify the D-trans message from the HP department. I think most people agree if you had a team and you had access to them daily, you would try some different, probably more complicated things. No secret, I love tagging up, but it requires constant coaching. It'd be great for, it's good for a college team. It'd be good for a younger pro team. I don't think you're going to get some veterans that, Adam Ford could get cancer to do it. I'm pretty sure about that. You know, they've got the personnel for that, right? So we tried to simplify, you know, what are we going to go with? What message are we going to go with? So what we've come up with is a list of priorities, and that's how we've tried to address the teaching of it. So the first one is ball pickup. So we have to have someone pick up the ball. So that was our first priority. In a 5-on-5 setting, we've sort of nailed it down to the point guard should get to the nail to then hopefully become a ball pickup. The next priority for us is the basket. So ball and basket. So if we have pressure on the ball, obviously, hopefully, they can't throw it over the top. But if they do, we've got somebody back at the basket anyway. So, and then in that particular drill, which was the Messina 3-on-3, we said the next priority was to plug. So ball, basket, plug. Then when it built to 4-on-4, it was ball, basket, plug, kick ahead.
Yep.
Try to take those away. Yeah.
And then was that just something – I laugh at this because I feel like every coach has gone through this at some point when they're just hemorrhaging fast break layups and it's like a defensive transition still. Do you think it was a lack of awareness or do you think it was just straight up, nah, we're on offense. I don't have to worry about defensive transition. Like, which one do you think it was? Or was it something completely different?
There was a real next play mentality problem, I felt. You know, players wrapped up in whether they scored or didn't get the pass or whatever it might be as opposed to next job.
I think I saw a bit of a lack of understanding of when D-trans starts. So even both days I asked the question, when do we start you know, thinking about or getting into our defensive transition positions. And both days, so I had girls, the babies, the 15s and some 16s, and then the boys, 18s, both answered once the team comes up with the ball. And so there was a lack of understanding of that actually starts on the rise of the shot. Once we sort of got through that and pushed through that, both groups did a better job of starting to think about their defensive transition earlier. Wasn't where it probably needed to be, but earlier than waiting to see what. So if you wait to see who's got the ball, by then it's, you know, yeah, especially as you get older, it's gone.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. So defensive transition is something I think all teams would like to work on. It is difficult. I get it from a perspective you may only have half court at your training sessions, but it doesn't mean that you still can't get them going to the positions. They obviously don't get to run, but getting them communicating a little bit of which position they're going to, who's got ball, that sort of stuff, I think is vital for all of them. Offensive transition. Zoe, what was the emphasis with the O-trans?
So a big part was, you know, guards trying to catch it on the fly rather than just standing still. We see far too much of guards just waiting for an outlet, you know, whoever it is that's rebounded, it goes to pass, defense shoots up the line and they're probably ending up at the foul line. So trying to catch it on that run just to ignite that pressure and that yeah. pace into what we're doing. Yeah. For the bigs, we had, you know, we obviously have our early and our delay series as to depending on if the big makes it down the floor or not. But in
just
the,
on that, you're still telling bigs to rerun.
Well, like in this, yeah. So in this, we were talking about we're going to be in early here to encourage that run from the big. So, but the big thing was, I'm not, Bestie, you could probably tell me about what it was like in your boys, younger boys. But the younger girls, we had to stand people under the baskets and remind them to run to the tip of the charge circle and not the post. Mm. And that was almost like a habit we had to break, which was strange because none of them were really at a size where you'd say you're already a definitive big, but trying to get them to, you know, they just want to run straight to the post. That was really important. For our lane runners, it was about hunting the sidelines, owning the corners depending on their shape as they were, you know, coming back. And if they have to bounce back to the ball, bounce back to that. But, you know, we're, like Bestie sort of said before, we understand that, you know, you could be gut running down that lane. Sometimes it's not possible to get all the way to the corner and back in the time to be able to kick the ball ahead. But if you've got that intent and you're running that way, but our guard's just lightning, that's fine because defense is going to be on the back foot because of the way you're running. So, but we do put in, you know, own those corners to keep our spacing and to be able to try and pump the ball inside or put heat on the rim in that first 8 seconds if we can.
Yep, makes sense. So into a little bit of team defense, which again we've spoken about with the 4v4 shell, the stay-go rotations and all that sort of stuff. Early trans build-up, delay trans build-up. You've kind of touched on that anyway in that one, Zoe, so no need to go over that again. I noticed with all of this, though, you put the defense in before the offense. Yep. Like in pretty much everything you've done, like the progression, why? Like why did you choose to go that way?
We need them to know that it's important. So if it's important to us, it'll be important to them. And so we often, it's really easy, and I find myself still doing it sometimes. We'll be in a defensive drill and someone will do something amazing offensively and I'm like, whoa, and praising the offense. It's really easy to get juiced about the offense, but at the end of the day, if we don't show them and convince them that it is important and that they need to put the time into it and the attention to detail needs to be there, then we're just up against it.
Did you find that the offense became better because the defense was like almost had a leg up because they already knew their rules, they knew what was expected of them? Did the offense then have to adjust quicker because of it?
Well, we did it everything except the ball screen coverages, as you would have seen. So there was some success offensively with the ball screens and the grenade handoffs. But, you know, I think by that point in the camp, there was some fatigue kicking in.
Yeah. I think about half an hour in, there was some fatigue kicking in.
It makes sense. And I mean, I'm looking at the last session now where it's like, you know, shooting, some team defense rotations again, review of offensive concepts, money ball, those types of things. Like at that stage of the camp, wiped? Like the kids were fairly well cooked by that point.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
and that's the one that was straight after lunch as well. So you've even got that, oh, I've just eaten, I've sat down for a little bit.
I want to.
Legs are a bit sore now. Like it's. It makes a lot of sense. And it's a really interesting camp. Like, did you find that with more fatigue, transfer dropped? Just like that retention of kids remembering what had been taught earlier?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I certainly saw that. We had to speak about, you know, making sure that they're not isolated activities. The whole point of it, and Bestie mentioned it at the start, was to be able to try and layer this and take from one activity to the next. And yeah, as fatigue grew, you know, it certainly it showed. Yeah, but what I will say though, and again, I was on the baby's court for the whole day, you know, we got times where it was like, whoa, that is exactly what we've been working on. That's exactly what we've asked for. Now, there are times it was absolute chaos, but we're talking read and, like, from an offensive perspective, we're talking read and react offense. You know, not so much rules as there are.
Not prescribed.
There's instruction. There's not really rules, you know. And so that's always going to be chaotic in the beginning. And then from a defensive perspective, we're saying get out of self-preservation mode and get yourself better, you know, get beaten in training so you're not being beaten in games. And so that sort of chaos is going to happen. But the amount of times where you looked at it and you were like, there it is. That's exactly what we were trying to accomplish with the day was really, really pleasing. So even with that fatigue.
Yep. So if you guys were going to run this camp again, say next weekend, for argument's sake, and I'll go back a step. I'm going to ask you both for the top three things that coaches need to focus on in association land after this first question. So you got a little bit of time to think if you need it. If you had to run that camp again, what would you change, if anything?
I'm thinking about my top three.
We'll answer this one first while Bestie's gone.
If I would change anything, I would probably flip the so what we've got in, I think it was session two, we went offensive and defensive transition and then into the early and delay.
Yep.
I'd probably flip that so they had something to run into.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. So you give them the structure before you give them the teaching
so
points
and
such. Yeah, okay.
So then we go into our offensive trans and it's like, okay, now start reading where the big is the rim runner, not so much the big.
Yeah,
no, no. And you go into something, but it's not.
Not vital.
You know, it wasn't something I went, oh my God, it's blown up the camp. But it would be maybe something I'd look at adjusting so then they flow into it and see success with their lane running as well.
Yep. What about you, Best?
From a content perspective, nothing. I would have either stretched it over 2 days.
Yep.
Or had a longer camp with larger breaks. But this is, you know, we're battling some logistical things. You know, we can't have a camp start at 8 o'clock when some of them are traveling 3-4 hours to get there, right? And the same on the way back. But there was a sense of, in session three, by the time we got to the gameplay, it was like, man, it's starting to look pretty good. You know, we just want to keep going.
Yep.
You know, so, and I think the athletes felt that way also, which is pleasing. So we do have another All-State camp in 2 months.
Yes.
This is the first time we're having two. So it'll be cool to see, you know, we've shown the whole, the hubs have seen the whole, you know, go and work on the parts and the skills that underpin it. And then let's come back together. So I think, you know, we're excited for that. And we're even, you know, talking about it today. So
yeah, excellent. Where do you know where that one is yet?
We don't as yet. Yep. We'd like to get it in Metro, but obviously the Saturdays is challenging.
Yep, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So anyone that's got a 10-court venue just lying around on a Saturday in Metro Melbourne, hit us up.
With a major meeting room and another room for coaches' lunches.
Yeah, I think that's what the State Basketball Centre is going to look like eventually. But
then that will be the aim once that's all completed. But obviously we're waiting a bit of time for
makes
that.
Makes sense. So
Bendigo was fantastic, by the way. Great host, great venue. Yeah. You know, I'd have no problem having it there again.
Absolutely. So coaches that do want to come and have a little bit of a look at All-State Camp, open door policy with you guys, isn't it?
Like absolutely.
So if you are keen to get involved and have a look, we obviously can't promise you'll be on court or anything like that, but if you want to just come and have a watch and see what's being taught, listen in to what the coaches are saying and those types of things, open door policy. You are always more than welcome to come in, hit up either Bestie or Zoe or myself, and I can easily pass you on the details if you need them. Similar with Jenny and Coops, they'll be more than happy to have extra bodies come in, because I think the more people that get exposed to it, the better off it's going to be, which flows into the next question. So Zoe, three things that you took out of that camp that you would want coaches at association level to start emphasising with their kids.
Okay, I'll take D if you want to take O.
I was going to say, can we go one for one?
Yeah, sure.
Because what happens if you like...
You're worried that she's going to take all yours? Yeah. It's consistency, Bestie. It's a good thing.
Mine would be... Obviously, closeouts is a problem, so that needs to be addressed. But also, it's inevitable you're going to get beaten. Even if you're good at closing out, at times you're going to get beaten. So push points being, instead of just, oh, well, I'll just happily run beside, just that emphasis on, okay, I've been beaten, but now I can beat them to the next spot to force them to somewhere they don't want to be, or just not allow them that straight line drive, you know, push point underneath the low hash and jam them on the tee or over elbows, you know, and that's possible even if you have been beaten, you know, so that mentality of, you know, yes, I've been beaten, but I'm not done.
Yeah, but it's also something you can't work on if you don't ever get beaten.
Correct.
And you will never get beaten if you close out 6 feet away from the ball.
And it's that, you know, like I mentioned before, we've got to get out of self-preservation mode. Those that step outside of that will become better defenders, but it's on us as coaches to make sure they're doing that. And the coaches on the weekend, you know, with our SDP kids are still, you know, we're still having to drive that as well. So it's not just a, you know, our coaches at Clubland that have to do this. It's our SDP coaches. It's our state coaches. It's anyone involved with our athletes.
Yep, makes sense. Bestie, what's yours?
Practice standards.
Ooh.
Yep.
Very
so,
philosophical.
Yeah. Just, you know, if you're taking the responsibility of being a coach, also take the responsibility of planning. And that should mean there's not much time standing around. You know, I'm sure everyone says, oh, you know, we'd be better if we had more time to practice. The time you've got is the time you've got. So make sure that there's not empty dead space in your practice. So things like making them run in and out, you know, self-organize with, you know, lights and darks, an understanding of, you know, we had one drill where it was, or one activity, where it was four people and one ball, right? And we'd combine two baskets for this. It was our receiver work. So we were doing it starting from three-quarter court. And I turn around and quite a few of the athletes are standing on the sideline. I said, okay, boys, how many are needed for this to work? Four. Okay. Do you need a ball? Yep. So what should you do? Get in a group of four with a ball. So those types of things. And that will help with some of the retention.
Yep.
So they're self-organizing. So the practice standards. You know, a drink break shouldn't take more than 30 to 40 seconds. Yep. It's not 2 minutes.
Yeah. Where else would they socialize, Bestie?
Well, they can
in
do
the
that.
Breaks.
I'm joking.
They can do that in the parking lot.
Yeah, makes sense. Zoe, number two, what do you got?
Lane running's a big one from an offensive perspective, you know, especially not social running. So getting comfortable with the fact that there's space between you and somebody that's in your team. So we saw a lot early when we got to offensive transition that everyone wanted to run that middle corridor, because they felt like if they weren't, especially if they were a lane run, like a wing lane runner, and they were ahead, they felt that if they weren't there, that they would pass wouldn't come over the top and they wouldn't be able to get that layup. They'll still be able to get it, but it also opens up other people as well. So getting them to push out, hunt those sidelines is huge, but also running with intent and running with purpose. You know, there's so too often, and our athletes are in the habit of, you know, jogging. You know, that it's, if we're going to talk about, you know, the three P's and pace being that first one, that's got to be a gut run sprint instead of just, again, that self-preservation sort of mode. So get them in the habit of that wide sprint lane running.
Yep, makes sense. Bestie, number two for you.
Communication.
Oh, I feel like this comes up in every podcast.
Yep.
And it's always their answer too when you ask about what's going on. With it. What could be better? Yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Well, I think it comes down to even, you know, things like counting when you're doing shooting drills and all those types of things. Putting the onus on the athletes to do it and showing that it's important. particularly when you're doing your defensive stuff like Zoe talked on.
Yep.
It's just, it's got to happen.
Yep. And it is, it's a real flippant throwaway thing from a lot of people. Oh, communication could always be better. Oh, box outs could always be better. Yeah, we all know it. But at some point, it's got to shift as well.
Yeah.
And that's on us as coaches to really drive that. And as much as we don't want to be rah-rah cheerleaders on the sidelines where we're just making noise for the sake of noise, that promotion of, you know, a loud gym is usually a happy gym. It's that kind of thing too. We do want our players doing a little bit more in that space. Zoe, your last one.
Transfer from activity to activity.
Oh, Bestie's just screwed up his face. I feel did I steal it? Last one.
Did I steal it?
No, that's right. I'll get another one. Go.
Apologies. That comes from us as coaches of holding them accountable to what you've worked on in your session already, making sure that whatever activity one is still prevalent in activity five, six, seven, however many activities you have in a session plan.
Yep.
But it was challenging at times, and yeah, they can't just be solely focused on what they're doing in front of them in that sense. That's not how they get better.
Yep, makes sense. Bestie, what was your last one?
You know, although we did, or we're doing a better job of sharing the ball and trying to find the right shot, so an understanding of what a good shot is obviously important. But here's your little gem, coaches. 1-0, time to go. 1-on-1, get it done. Now, that doesn't mean score it. Just make the right play. 1-on-2, not for you. 1-on-3, sub, you're sitting next to me. 1-on-4, you're out the door. Right? And live by that.
Done well, because I normally forget 3, I think it is, or 4. I can't remember. I always forget one of those, but you've done well there. But it's a valid point. Just that understanding of when to go, when not to go is so vital with our athletes. And the transition stuff is not necessarily as difficult, because I feel like they kind of work that one out. But in particular in the half court, like that's an issue. It is a problem for our athletes. So overall, happy with the camp though, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Very.
Yep.
Weekend gone. Photography skills improved.
Success. And look, we actually spoke about it today. We had a lot of coaches come, which was great. Yeah, it was really good, and like you said earlier, the open door policy with this stuff. Yep. Come and see it. Come and spread the word.
Excellent. No, I appreciate you two jumping back into this. I know this has probably felt like one of your meetings when you're going through content and all that sort of stuff, so I do apologise for that. But it is great for other coaches to hear what went on. Obviously, as much as there was a ton of coaches there was a ton of coaches that couldn't make it for various reasons, so it's great for them to be able to now pick up what they've potentially missed and can go back and teach at club land and association land as well. So big thanks to you two for jumping into this one. Coaches, that does wrap us up for this week. We are back next week. It may be the long-lost return of Jenny Screen on the podcast. We'll see how we go. But other than that, good luck with your coaching, and we'll catch you all next week. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.